Chapter 59. A sort of instinct to the right, towards the jetty and the harbor, the scene of his daily labors. The great length of the custom house loomed up all at once like the wall of a factory. Not a soul challenged his approach, and his curiosity became excited as he passed cautiously towards the front by the unexpected sight of two lighted windows. They had the fascination of a lonely vigil kept by some mysterious watcher up there, those two windows shining dimly upon the harbor in the whole vast extent of the abandoned building. The solitude could almost be felt. A strong smell of wood smoke hung about in a thin haze, which was faintly perceptible to his raised eyes against the glitter of the stars. As he advanced in the profound silence, the shrilling of innumerable cicalas in the dry grass seemed positively deafening to his strained ears. Slowly, step by step, he found himself in the great hall, somber and full of acrid smoke. A fire built against the staircase had burnt down impotently to a low heap of embers. The hardwood had failed to catch. Only a few steps at the bottom smoldered, with a creeping glow of sparks defining their charred edges. At the top he saw a streak of light from an open door. It fell upon the vast landing, all foggy with a slow drift of smoke. That was the room. He climbed the stairs, then checked himself, because he had seen within the shadow of a man cast upon one of the walls. It was a shapeless, high-shouldered shadow of somebody standing still, with lowered head, out of his line of sight. The Capitas, remembering that he was totally unarmed, stepped aside, and, effacing himself upright in a dark corner, waited with his eyes fixed on the door. The whole enormous ruined barrack of a place, unfinished, without ceilings under its lofty roof, was pervaded by the smoke swaying to and fro in the faint cross drafts playing in the obscurity of many lofty rooms and barn-like passages. Once one of the swinging shutters came against the wall with a single sharp crack, as if pushed by an impatient hand. A piece of paper scurried out from somewhere, rustling along the landing. The man, whoever he was, did not darken the lighted doorway. Twice the Capitas, advancing a couple of steps out of his corner, craned his neck in the hope of catching sight of what he could be at, so quietly, in there. But every time he saw only the distorted shadow of broad shoulders and bowed head. He was doing apparently nothing, and stirred not from the spot, as though he were meditating, or, perhaps, reading a paper. And not a sound issued from the room. Once more the Capitas stepped back. He wondered who it was, some monterist? But he dreaded to show himself. To discover his presence on shore, unless after many days, would, he believed, endanger the treasure. With his own knowledge possessing his whole soul, it seemed impossible that anybody in Sulaco should fail to jump at the right surmise. After a couple of weeks or so it would be different. Who could tell he had not returned overland from some port beyond the limits of the Republic? The existence of the treasure confused his thoughts with a peculiar sort of anxiety, as though his life had become bound up with it. It rendered him timorous for a moment before that enigmatic, lighted door. Devil take the fellow. He did not want to see him. There would be nothing to learn from his face, known or unknown. He was a fool to waste his time there in waiting. Less than 5 minutes after entering the place, the Capitas began his retreat. He got away down the stairs with perfect success, gave one upward look over his shoulder at the light on the landing, and ran stealthily across the hall. But at the very moment he was turning out of the great door, with his mind fixed upon escaping the notice of the man upstairs, somebody he had not heard coming briskly along the front ran full into him. Both muttered a stifled exclamation of surprise, and leaped back and stood still, each indistinct to the other. Nostromo was silent. The other man spoke first, in an amazed and deadened tone. "Who are you?" Already Nostromo had seemed to recognize Dr. Monaghan. He had no doubt now. He hesitated the space of a second. The idea of bolting without a word presented itself to his mind. No use. an inexplicable repugnance to pronounce the name by which he was known kept him silent a little longer. At last he said in a low voice, "A cargador." He walked up to the other. Dr. Monaghan had received a shock. He flung his arms up and cried out his wonder aloud, forgetting himself before the marvel of this meeting. Nostromo angrily warned him to moderate his voice. The custom house was not so deserted as it looked. There was somebody in the lighted room above. There is no more evanescent quality in an accomplished fact than its wonderfulness. Solicited incessantly by the considerations affecting its fears and desires, the human mind turns naturally away from the marvelous side of events. And it was in the most natural way possible that the doctor asked this man whom only 2 minutes before he believed to have been drowned in the gulf, "You have seen somebody up there? Have you?" "No, I have not seen him." "Then how do you know?" "I was running away from his shadow when we met."
"His shadow?"
"Yes. His shadow in the lighted room," said Nostromo, in a contemptuous tone. Leaning back with folded arms at the foot of the immense building, he dropped his head, biting his lips slightly, and not looking at the doctor. "And now," he thought to himself, "he will begin asking me about the treasure." But the doctor's thoughts were concerned with an event not as marvelous as Nostromo's appearance, but in itself much less clear. Why had Satillo taken himself off with his whole command with this suddenness and secrecy? What did this move portend? However, it dawned upon the doctor that the man upstairs was one of the officers left behind by the disappointed colonel to communicate with him. "I believe he is waiting for me," he said.
"It is possible.
I must see. Do not go away yet, Capitas."
"Go away where?" muttered Nostromo.
Already the doctor had left him. He remained leaning against the wall, staring at the dark water of the harbor. The shrilling of cicalas filled his ears. An invincible vagueness coming over his thoughts took from them all power to determine his will.
"Capitas! Capitas!"
The doctor's voice called urgently from above. The sense of betrayal and ruin floated upon his somber indifference, as upon a sluggish sea of pitch. But he stepped out from under the wall, and, looking up, saw Dr. Monaghan leaning out of a lighted window.
"Come up and see what Satillo has done. You need not fear the man up here,"
he answered by a slight, bitter laugh.
"Fear a man? The capitas of the Sulaco cargadors fear a man."
It angered him that anybody should suggest such a thing. It angered him to be disarmed and skulking and in danger because of the accursed treasure, which was of so little account to the people who had tied it round his neck. He could not shake off the worry of it. To Nostromo the doctor represented all these people. And he had never even asked after it. Not a word of inquiry about the most desperate undertaking of his life. Thinking these thoughts, Nostromo passed again through the cavernous hall, where the smoke was considerably thinned, and went up the stairs, not so warm to his feet now, towards the streak of light at the top. The doctor appeared in it for a moment, agitated and impatient.
"Come up! Come up!"
At the moment of crossing the doorway the capitas experienced a shock of surprise. The man had not moved. He saw his shadow in the same place. He started, then stepped in with a feeling of being about to solve a mystery. It was very simple. For an infinitesimal fraction of a second, against the light of 2 flaring and guttering candles, through a blue, pungent, thin haze which made his eyes smart, he saw the man standing, as he had imagined him, with his back to the door, casting an enormous and distorted shadow upon the wall. Swifter than a flash of lightning followed the impression of his constrained, toppling attitude, the shoulders projecting forward, the head sunk low upon the breast. Then he distinguished the arms behind his back, and wrenched so terribly that the 2 clenched fists, lashed together, had been forced up higher than the shoulder blades. From there his eyes traced in one instantaneous glance the hide rope going upwards from the tied wrists over a heavy beam, and down to a staple in the wall.
He did not want to look at the rigid legs, at the feet hanging down nervelessly, with their bare toes some 6 inches above the floor, to know that the man had been given a estropade till he had swooned. His first impulse was to dash forward and sever the rope at one blow. He felt for his knife. He had no knife, not even a knife. He stood quivering, and the doctor, perched on the edge of the table, facing thoughtfully the cruel and lamentable sight, his chin in his hand, uttered, without stirring, tortured, and shot dead through the breast getting cold. This information calmed the Capitas. One of the candles flickering in the socket went out. W, who did this? He asked. Satillo, I tell you. Who else? Tortured, of course. But why shot? The doctor looked fixedly at Nostromo, who shrugged his shoulders slightly. N.D. Mark, shot suddenly, on impulse. It is evident. I wish I had a secret. Nostromo had advanced, and stooped slightly to look. I seem to have seen that face somewhere, he muttered. W, who is he? The doctor turned his eyes upon him again. I may yet come to envying his fate. What do you think of that? Capitas, eh? But Nostromo did not even hear these words. Seizing the remaining light, he thrust it under the drooping head. The doctor sat oblivious, with a lost gaze. Then the heavy iron candlestick, as if struck out of Nostromo's hand, clattered on the floor. Hello! Exclaimed the doctor, looking up with a start. He could hear the Capitas stagger against the table and gasp. In the sudden extinction of the light within, the dead blackness sealing the window frames became alive with stars to his sight. Of course, the doctor muttered to himself in English. Enough to make him jump out of his skin. Nostromo's heart seemed to force itself into his throat. His head swam. Hirsch. The man was Hirsch. He held on tight to the edge of the table. But he was hiding in the lighter, he almost shouted, his voice fell. I in the lighter, and Satillo brought him in, said the doctor. H, he is no more startling to you than you were to me. What I want to know, is how he induced some compassionate soul to shoot him. So Satillo knows, began Nostromo, in a more equable voice. Everything, interrupted the doctor. The Capitas was heard striking the table with his fist. Everything? What are you saying, there? Everything? No, everything? It is impossible. Everything? Of course. What do you mean by impossible? I tell you, I have heard this Hirsch questioned last night, here, in this very room. He knew your name, Deckard's name, and all about the loading of the silver. ... The lighter was cut in two. He was groveling in abject terror before Satillo, but he remembered that much. What do you want more? He knew least about himself. They found him clinging to their anchor. He must have caught at it just as the lighter went to the bottom. Went to the bottom? Repeated Nostromo, slowly. Attilo believes that? Bueno. The doctor, a little impatiently, was unable to imagine what else could anybody believe. Yes, Satillo believed that the lighter was sunk, and the Capitas de Cargadores, together with Martin Deckard and perhaps one or two other political fugitives, had been drowned. I told you well, senior doctor, remarked Nostromo at that point, that Satillo did not know everything. Eh? What do you mean? He did not know I was not dead. Neither did we. And you did not care, none of you caballeros on the wharf, once you got off a man of flesh and blood like yourselves on a fool's business, that could not end well. You forget, Capitas, I was not on the wharf. And I did not think well of the business. So you need not taunt me. I tell you what, man, we had but little leisure to think of the dead. Death stands near behind us all. You were gone. I went, indeed. Broke in Nostromo. And for the sake of what, tell me? Ah, that is your own affair, the doctor said, roughly. Oh, not ask me. Their flowing murmurs paused in the dark. Perched on the edge of the table with slightly averted faces, they felt their shoulders touch, and their eyes remained directed towards an upright shape nearly lost in the obscurity of the inner part of the room, that with projecting head and shoulders, in ghastly immobility, seemed intent on catching every word. "My bean," Nostromo muttered at last. "So be it. Teresa was right. It is my own affair." "Teresa is dead," remarked the doctor, absently, while his mind followed a new line of thought suggested by what might have been called Nostromo's return to life. "As she died, the poor woman." "Without a priest?" the Capitas asked, anxiously. "What a question. Who could have got a priest for her last night? May God keep her soul," ejaculated Nostromo, with a gloomy and Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.